All glories to some of the all glories to CC Guru and Gona and Tai Gore. Om Jyotirmanandasya Janardana Sarasya Chakshu Sumanatam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavishtam Stapitam Nuna Uttare Sayam Vipakada Mayam Dadati Sapanandikam. Once the copper to be a skeleton creepers in the way with a patitanam papaneva vaisnava. Do you remember from the last thing that happened in the last class? Krishna? Did you?
Krishna.
Oh. And?
Yes.
And? One other thing happened in that chapter, in the 37th chapter. Yeah, exactly. And the last verse was, Krishna then smashed the boulder blocking the cave's entrance and led the trapped cowherd boys to safety. Thereafter, as the demigods and cowherd boys sang his glories, he returned to his cowherd village of Gokul. Now, in the previous chapter, what happened? What else?
Kamsa. At the beginning, he went to
Narada Muni went to Kamsa, and then Kamsa made his plan. He lined up Kuvalaya Pita, Sanora Mastika, the performance of the Dhanurjagya, the bow sacrifice, and he also asked Akura to come to Vrindavan. Now in chapter 38, Akura, because that happened, anyway, we'll hear when it happened, but the very next day was the day, so 2 days ago was, so to speak, was when Aristasura was killed and Kamsa made his plans. And then, not 2 days ago, that was yesterday. And then today, Kesi was killed and Vyomasura, and Krishna spoke to Narada Muni. And on that very same day, because he had been asked the day before, Akura began his journey to Vrindavan. Sukadeva Goswami said, after passing the night in the city of Mathura, that was after Kamsa had spoken to him, the high-minded Akura mounted his chariot and set off for the cowherd village of Nandamaraj. Nandagokulam. Prayayao Nandagokulam. Sitva Ratam Astaya. He mounted his chariot, Rata, and set off for the cowherd village of Nandamaraj. Report. King Kamsa ordered Akura to go to Vrindavan on the Ekadasi day. Tomorrow is the Ekadasi day, actually. On the dark fortnight of the Vedic month of Falgun. That means it's just coming to the Amavasya, or the, where there's the new moon. After spending the night in Mathura, Akura left early the next day. And that morning, Narada offered his prayers to Krishna in Vrindavan, And in the afternoon, the demon Vayoma was killed. At dusk, Akura entered the Lord's village. So that's the sequence. As Akura traveled on the road, that great soul Akura felt tremendous devotion for the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead. And thus he began to consider as follows. So this is the process of going to see Krishna, going to Vrindavan. Because he was thinking about who he was going to see. Because, and this is the benefit of traveling in a simple way. Well, he was traveling by chariot, but sometimes people would walk for months and months. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he walked from Jagannath Puri to Vrindavan. And Sanatana Goswami walked from Bengal to Vrindavan. Rupa Goswami did. That's how the Jagadananda Pandit, it describes, walked from Vrindavan, from Puri to Vrindavan. Why did they walk?
There was
no cars, there was no trains, there was no buses, there was no
aeroplanes.
So that way it was very practical to walk, because basically there was no rickshaws, there was no anything like that. But so we think, oh, how unfortunate, how primitive, it would take them months to go, and today we can go in an hour, that cover the same distance an hour. But what is the point that we'll make now, Jagatuni?
That your body can go in an hour.
And then what happens? Then 3 days later, your mind arrives. But if you take this process, the slower process, you're thinking about it, I'm going to Vrindavan, I'm going to see Krishna, I'm going to a holy place. So your mind arrives 2 weeks before your body. And then when your body arrives, you're actually there. And then you're ready for the experience of a tirtha, because the word avatara ava means going down, and tara means crossing, and from the same verb root that tara is, so the avatar crosses, comes down and crosses from a higher realm into a lower realm. And the same verb root of tara is tirtha, which is the most common word for a holy place. And when the avatara, or when a power personality or the Lord himself crosses down and comes down to this plane, the places where he performs his pastimes are called tirthas. And then, because that's the crossing place, and then he leaves, if he leaves, but the tirtha remains, and it's an up-crossing place. So you can cross easily back up, more easily, there's more access, because of the down-crossing that has occurred, you can get the up-crossing. So tirtha also means like threshold. Like the threshold of the door is in between. So it's in between the realms, between the down and the up. So it's easy to cross. You may be wondering why your eyelids are feeling heavier and heavier. Excuse me?
Nap time,
yes. So, Akura was thinking, he was considering as follows as he was traveling on the chariot. What pious deeds have I done? What severe austerities have I undergone? What worship performed? Or what charity given so that today I will see Lord Keshava? So what is the meaning of that verse?
He's reflecting on what might have gone on in the past, which has led him having such a great fortune, and on that day he receives the blessing of his body.
So this is the mood that one's supposed to have, or part of the mood one is supposed to have when one is going to see Krishna or going to a holy place. One should think of one's fortune because one is getting a great opportunity to come closer to Krishna, or in this particular case to actually see Krishna. And this is what fortune is. So within this culture, people saw that misfortune, as we mentioned a few days ago, when misfortune happens, it is caused by something inappropriate that I have done previously. And on the other side, when something fortunate happens, it is by either I've done some pious deeds, or maybe I've performed some austerities, or worship, or charity. So what good fortune have I done, Akura thought, that is giving me this most fortunate of opportunities on this day, very day, to see Krishna? So what a wonderful thing, on this very day, to see Krishna, and not obviously thinking that, oh, because I'm so wonderful, I'm going to see Krishna. No. But on the other hand, what could I possibly have done that can allow me this most fortunate of opportunity to see Krishna on this very day? Since I'm a materialistic person absorbed simply in sense gratification, I think it is as difficult for me to have gotten this opportunity to see Lord Uttama Shloka as it would be for one born in a sudra to allow to recite the Vedic mantras. So this was in the Vedic culture, one, there was very, very strict observance of vanashrama, and persons of different births had particular type of qualities to be able to perform generally particular activities. So if, and you can see this even today, that when people may have some, on one level, some qualification, for instance, to be a president or a governor of some sort, but if they don't have the matching character, say if you have a mercantile mentality and you become the governor, what will you do? When you're in there, you'll do your mercantile business and you'll just somehow or another squeeze some money out of it. Or if you have a brahminical activity, if you don't find a person with a governing mentality to govern for you, you'll just want to do shastric type of things, and while something else may be required. So in the Vedic times, sudras, even if they were literate, unless they had the character, they were not allowed to study the Vedic mantras because there would be an exploitative tendency in that. And when one has a brahminical nature, his mentality will be to have not only studied, but he will do the proper thing with the knowledge that he has. And what is that proper thing? He will give it away. And what will he take for giving it away? He won't require anything. This is ideal. He'll just be in the mood of giving, and therefore the Brahmins are most respected in society because they're not fruitive, they're just giving charitable in that sense, and they're giving the greatest of things of knowledge. So he's saying, he's making an analogy here. Since I have no qualification, I'm a materialistic person, I'm attached to sense gratification. So what qualification or and therefore opportunity do I really deserve to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Because the qualification for being with Krishna is what? Krishna conscious, which means love for Krishna, and also one has to be of the same spiritual quality. One can't have materialistic qualifications. Because if one is of the spiritual quality, and it's like fire, if you want to get very, very close to fire, you have to be of a fiery quality. You can't be earthy or watery, or you can't get near the fire. So similarly, we can't actually come close to Krishna until our nature becomes fully spiritualized. So that's what Akura is saying. Just like just a common worker, they don't you don't find common workers who get their pleasure from banging nails and going to pubs and drinking beer and roughing it up with their mates. You know, you don't find them usually at symphony orchestras, recitals and things like that, because it's just there's a mixture of nature that usually isn't, they're not compatible. So he's thinking, for me to have this opportunity, even though my nature and consciousness is incompatible with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's like a sudra, just a common worker having the magnanimity of heart to recite the Vedic mantras. So what have I done to get something that I don't actually deserve? So this is what he's thinking. But yet he knows, because he's a devotee of Krishna, he knows that this is the most cherishable item, and he wants it desperately to be with Krishna, to see Krishna, to have darshan of Krishna. But he knows he's completely undeserving. So this is the mentality that he has, and it is quite suitable. And then he says, but enough of such thoughts. After all, so he's thinking, this type of thinking, maybe it may be true, but I don't want to think in that way, because after all, even a fallen soul like me can have the chance to behold the infallible Supreme Lord. For one of the conditioned souls being swept along in the river of time may sometimes reach the shore. So it can happen. It can happen. There's a comment by Vishwanath. Akura subdued his humility by his intelligence and determination and thought, though I am low, it is possible for me to see the Lord. First he was thinking, how is it possible? But then he thought, well, it is possible. Sometimes someone being swept along by a fast river current, just by fate, chance, comes across the shore. Today, all of my sinful reactions have been eradicated. What does eradicated mean? Removed. And my birth has become worthwhile, since I will offer my obeisances to the Supreme Lord's lotus feet, which mystic yogis meditate upon. So what is he speaking about? That I'm actually going to see. And if you consider this point, it is quite amazing. He's actually going to see the source of all creation, who is a person who is walking around the land of Vrindavan. He's all powerful. He's all beautiful. He's all famous, all strong, all wealthy, all renounced, all knowing. And he's effulgent, he's all attractive. When he walks in the forest, the whole forest takes on a hue of effulgent sapphires. He's so effulgent, he's the source of all charisma, all power, all. He's attracting everyone's consciousness, and Akrura is thinking, and today I'm going to have the opportunity to offer my obeisances and fall at the feet of this Lord. I will offer my obeisances to the Supreme Lord's Lotus Feet, which mystic yogis meditate upon. Yogis, these kind of yogis he's talking about, may go to a lonely cave in the Himalayan mountains and sit in that cave for thousands of years or maybe hundreds of years and just simply remain in trance, absorbed in the subtleties of consciousness, and in that subtlety of consciousness have their minds fully focused on the Supreme Lord, and that is the perfection of yoga. And they're doing that, and they're performing austerities, living alone, doing this and that, not eating, not drinking. This is described to some degree in brief in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And just practicing their breathing and just perfecting their, making their consciousness more and more subtle and perfect so that it can be unflickering. And then when it is unflickering, and all this is so difficult to perfect, and then when it is all unflickering, turn their consciousness fully inward and meditate upon the Lord who is within the heart. And so this is such an exacting science. And this is what they're trying to do. And here I am, a materialist, a servant of Kamsa, someone who's attached to family and this and that. And I'm going to gain that which the greatest of yogis take the trouble and austerities for hundreds and thousands of years to make their attempt, and without any surety of them attaining it, and I'm going to get it. So that means, he says, today my sinful reactions have been eradicated, because what is the implication of that? And my birth has been worthwhile. That one's the easier one. And my birth has been worthwhile. Because
Krishna.
Yes, to see Krishna. Atsanvantam phalamidam. This is the perfection of the eyes, the perfection of one's life, to actually have the fortune of being in the presence of Krishna. And today my sinful reactions have all been eradicated. So what does that mean? Yeah. Otherwise, if he's not purified, how will he be able to see the Lord? So Akrura, as he's going along, he's gaining more confidence, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. Indeed, today King Kamsa has shown me extreme mercy by sending me to see the lotus feet of Lord Hari, who has now appeared in this world. Simply by the effulgence of his toenails, many souls in the past have transcended the insurmountable darkness of material existence and achieved liberation. Purport. Akrura noted how ironic it was that the envious demoniac Kamsa had given him an extraordinary blessing by sending him to see the Supreme Lord Krishna. So what is the meaning of ironic? Huh? No.
Contradictory.
Yes, contradictory. That he's a demon, and demons, what kind of blessings can a demon give you? May you die today? May you die before I kill you? But yet, how ironic it is that the one who's so inimical to Krishna, who was trying to kill Krishna, and he just heard his demonic plan and his terrible mind. He's giving him the greatest blessing is coming from his mouth, from his blackened heart. Let's see what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, and then we'll go over this verse a little more. A crow thought, furthermore, even though I have been ordered to do this by Kamsa, who hates Krishna, I have actually gotten a very favorable result. Because when you're in the service of someone who's horrible, you expect horrible results to come. Mm-hmm. And how is it that someone who's horrible has given me something to do that's going to bring the most favorable result? Amazingly, even though Kamsa is an envious rascal, today he has been, sounds like he has a problem with his boss. Even though Kamsa is an envious rascal, which is a good sign if you have a boss like Kamsa, today he has been especially merciful to me because he has sent me to see Krishna. Previously, such persons as Ambarish were delivered from the material world by one ray of the effulgent lotus feet of Sri Krishna. I'm actually going to see him personally. Me, I'm going to see him. So, let's just read the verse again in English. Today, King Kamsa has shown me extreme mercy by sending me to see the lotus feet of Lord Hari, who has now appeared in this world. So he knew that Krishna, his appearance in this world, is something remarkable. Why? Because again, he's the all-powerful supreme creator. He's all-powerful, he's all-beautiful, the source of all universes, and yet he's living just a few kilometers away and walking through the Vrindavan forests, herding the cows, because everyone in Mathura knew about Krishna and what he was doing, because that's what everyone was talking about. So he's now come to this world, and simply by the effulgence, he's so powerful and so effulgent and so wonderful. Simply by the effulgence of his toenails, which is the lowest part of his body, many souls from the past have transcended the insurmountable darkness of material existence and achieved liberation. So I'm going to see the full person whose toenails are so powerful that they give people liberation. So what fortune am I getting? And we should also notice that we didn't hear Nanda Maharaj speaking quite like this, and we didn't hear Yashoda Maya speaking like this, and we didn't hear the cowherd boys speaking like this, and we didn't hear the Braja Gopika speaking like this, because Akura is coming from outside and he has a different kind of consciousness. So when the residents of Vrindavan speak about Krishna, they don't talk about, oh, how fortunate we are, we're going to see the one whose toenails are so wonderful that they can give us liberation, and they can award liberation so easily. They're thinking of Krishna in a different way. They're not thinking that they can get liberation from Krishna or get anything from Krishna. They're just completely enamored by Krishna. That's basically what it was. They were completely captivated by him. Why? Yes, in the different forms that love took. Either Krishna was their master, or Krishna was their friend, or Krishna was their son, or Krishna was their beloved. They were completely captivated by Krishna. Why? Yes, because he's beautiful. In what sense is he beautiful? Take your time. Huh?
Every sense.
Huh?
Every sense.
Well, which of those, some of those every senses or what? his flute playing. What's that verse? Venu Madhura Rupa. That's from the Madhurastakam. You know that? Yeah, his smiling face. His curly hair is beautiful.
His flirting eyes are beautiful.
His what kind?
Flirting.
Flirting eyes. And they're compared to a wagtail. And sidelong glances.
And he cares about his friends.
Huh?
He cares about his friends.
Yeah. He also eats. Right? Chaki, he also eats, right?
Yes, he does.
He does. He can even eat a mountain of food. And his turban is beautiful. And what was he doing when he was... He had to kill some demon or something, and he had his turban. And he took his hair and tucked it into his turban so it wasn't, because it wasn't coming out and falling in a wonderful way. Or as he just tucked his turban, sometimes he tied his hair behind when he was ready for a fight, he tightened his belt. What else about Krishna was charming?
His dancing is beautiful.
His soft bodily dance.
His forest garland. His forest garland, yes. Some of the verses, remember those verses that the gopis were saying? But the first one would talk about his beauty, and the second one would talk about the effect of his flute playing and everything. So sometimes his earrings that would reflect off of his cheeks.
Jokes and words are beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, what's his nose compared to? Do you know?
Sesame flower.
What does sesame flower look like? I don't know. Google it.
The true use of Google.
But it's also compared to a parrot's beak. And he's a pearl. And he would stand in a threefold bending form. And his face was decorated by the forest minerals of Braja, of Govardhan, and he would have so many ornaments put on him, gold and jeweled ornaments, and he would have gunja berry necklaces and garlands, and he would have forest flowers, and atop his head he had a feather. Yes, indeed, he had a feather, a very colorful feather. It's a gift of the peacocks. And he would walk in this very slow, deliberate way, like an elephant. So cool. And he would put his elbow on the shoulder of one of his friends, and he would take a lotus and twirl it around. How cool was that? He was so, he knew just how to attract everyone's heart, and he was so naughty, and you couldn't control him at all. You'd do something very cleverly, and you think you were so clever, and then he would do something completely different and defeat your words, because he was the supreme, he's the supreme dominator. His predominator. And his footprints everywhere. What are some of the that comes up soon? So he was so beautiful. So the residents of Vrindavan were captivated by love of Krishna. An Akura is a great exalted devotee, a relative of Krishna, who is even older than Krishna, much older than Krishna. But his love is not as strong as the residents of Vrindavan's love. He has so much knowledge of who Krishna is, It's so wonderful. But the residents of Vrindavan, they have knowledge of who Krishna is too. But the sweetness of their love overpowers the knowledge. The power, the potency, the magnitude of their love overpowers their consciousness of how potent Krishna is. So if we were going to see Krishna today, everyone's suddenly smiling. What a nice thought. But we'd think, how is that possible, considering what my mind is like? If a Kura's mind was just thinking, what about... Kura noted how ironic it was that it was Kamsa who had given him the extraordinary blessing of seeing Krishna. So what irony is that? Now he's talking about Krishna. First, he mentioned that just the effulgence of Krishna's lotus feet was enough to give liberation. And his whole form is completely captivating. So he's talking about the potency of the lotus feet of Krishna. So he says, those lotus feet are worshipped by Brahma, Shiva, and all the other demigods, by the goddess of fortune, and also by the great sages and Vaishnavas. Upon those lotus feet, the Lord walks about the forest while herding the cows, with his companions, and those feet are smeared with the kunkum from the gopis' breasts. So he's saying, he's pointing out there's such a contradiction here, an apparent contradiction, that Krishna is so powerful, he's the worshipable, most worshipable, unlimitedly worshipable by the most powerful persons. So when the most intelligent, pious, powerful persons say this person is worshipable, that really means something. Everyone is worshipping them and thinking they're so powerful, and they're saying, no, this is the person that's worshipable. So it really means something. On the other hand, if someone who's little, insignificant, and foolish praises and says, oh, you're the most wonderful, it doesn't mean so much because his knowledge and perception is so limited. So he may, because like for a young child, who's the most powerful person that he knows? It's his father, but his father may not be very powerful. He has to go to work every day and serve some boss or something like that, but that's what he knows. So if the father says, oh, you're the most wonderful, of course, if the boy says that, the father, of course, feels complimented, but he knows that, in fact, that he's not the most wonderful, because he sees, with his superior knowledge, he sees others as more wonderful than he, because he's older, more experienced, and wiser, etc. So, when a Kura says, those lotus feet that give liberation just by the effulgence of the toenails. So by saying that the effulgence of the toenails give liberation, needs some muffler work, I think. By saying that the effulgence of the toenails can give liberation, so the implication in that is what to speak of. Like if there's a wealthy person, and you say he has money in the bank, and he gets interest from the money he has in the bank, and if you take the interest that he gets in 1 year and put it in a bank account, the interest that you get from his interest will give interest, and the interest that you get from the interest, and the interest can buy this huge, from the interest of the interest of the interest, you know, just something, an inch can buy this huge, huge, huge building. So then what are you saying? The interest of his interest, that means just imagine how much wealth he actually has. So if just the effulgence, the brightness emanating from his toenails can give liberation, just imagine the potency of this person that I'm going to see today and offer my obeisances to. And Akura, therefore, is so excited because he's never seen him before. And all he can do is think like this. He must be so powerful. He must be so wonderful. This is the falseness of his toenails, and I'm going to see him today. So, what does that kind of thinking do? Yeah, but it certainly fills you with excitement too that you can actually see him. Those lotus feet that I shall see and offer my obeisances today are worshipped by Brahma, Shiva, and all the other demigods, and by the goddess of fortune. If the goddess of fortune favors someone, then that person prospers continuously. But the one who everyone is seeking her favor, she is a devoted worshiper of Krishna, of the lotus feet of Krishna. So another indication of just imagine how fortunate he is. And also by the great sages and Vaishnavas, the munis. The munis are great speculators, and their speculation and their mental agility is brought to its perfection when their consciousness is placed at the lotus feet of Krishna. They worship the lotus feet of Krishna. They find everything that satisfies them. Why does someone worship someone? Because they're thinking, here's where I get my satisfaction. I'll get what I don't have. I'll find my rest. I'll find my shelter. So the munis and the Vaishnavas, the munibhi sasatvatai, along with the devotees, the sattvatas, the devotees, they're also, they join in this point of worshipping the lotus feet of Krishna. So he's saying everyone is worshipping those lotus feet. And upon those lotus feet, so here's the contradiction, they're completely worshipable, but on those lotus feet, he's walking about the forest, no shoes on, while herding the cows. He's the all-powerful Supreme Lord, and he's acting as a cowboy. Why would the all-powerful Supreme Lord, who is completely independent, he's the only one in existence who gets to do what he wants. We all want to only do what we want, and we never end up doing what we want. Anything that we want, practically, we always have to do what everyone else wants. But Krishna he is so powerful, and he's completely independent, and he gets to do exactly what he wants, anytime he wants, every time. And look what he's doing. He's walking around Vrindavan without shoes, in the forest of Vrindavan, and he's herding the cows. Now what could induce him to do that? This is his independent desire. He's playing his flute. This is his independent desire. He wants to do this. This is where he finds the greatest satisfaction. Because these are an ordinary cows, and the dust of Vrindavan is an ordinary dust, and the residents of Vrindavan are an ordinary people. He chooses those people to be with who he has the most, and not only people, but everything and everyone in Vrindavan has the unique qualification of a particular flavor of their love for him. And that attracts him so much. Surely I shall see the face of Lord Mukunda. What's sure about it? How does he know he's going to see? So he's talked about the feet, and now he's talking about the face that he will see. So he's moved up in his meditation. He's going to see the beautiful face of Mukunda. Why is he thinking that today? Because he sees auspicious signs. He says, the deer are now walking past me on my right. Auspicious. That face, framed by his curling hair, is beautified by his attractive cheeks and nose, his smiling glances, and his reddish lotus eyes. Saktini, what is the nature of his smiling glances? Hare Krishna.
Aren't you smiling glances?
You have come? How nice?
Yeah.
His smiling glances and his reddish lotus eyes. Why are his lotus eyes? First of all, what does it mean to have lotus eyes?
It's shaped like a lotus petal.
And what is a lotus petal shaped like?
A lotus petal is shaped like it goes large and very, and then it goes straight and thin.
Like this.
Like up there you can see the lotus petal. And they go right back almost to the ears, to the very, very normal.
Very captivating. Does anyone have startling lotus eyes here? I mean, not here. All the devotees have lotus hearts.
I think they do, but they're too far away for everyone to see.
Oh. I still remember it, that once in 1975, which was quite a few years ago, I was walking down the street in Melbourne, and I was walking and I saw someone. In those days, there weren't very many Indians walking around Melbourne. And there's this one young man, somehow or another, I just looked at him, and he had lotus eyes, and had never seen anyone with eyes like that before. And it was quite shocking. Like, Chinese people have almond eyes like that, but he had eyes that were really big and long. And usually I don't look at guys' eyes or anything like that, but it was so, like, shocking. Huh? He's Indian.
The first experience of an Indian?
No, I had met Prabhupada. And I've been to India, too.
Sometimes freakish things can happen.
Like, sometimes it's raining. That was a good one. It was okay.
Freakish is when he has no eyes.
Or four eyes, or seven eyes, or something.
On daring arts have lotus eyes.
Huh?
On this planet, nobody has lotus eyes.
Except for this, maybe that was...
That's why it's freakish.
But in any case, it was quite amazing. Sometimes, every once in a while, you see someone with really, really big eyes. Like that, especially in India, you see that every once in a while. And all the ladies, they always try to make their eyes bigger and everything like that by putting, you know, painting their eyes and stuff like that, putting all kinds, taking out the paint can and, you know. Like that.
When
but
they dance, they draw lines around their eyes that go right back like this.
Yeah.
So that when you see them from the distance, they look like they have eyes much bigger than the shape of their actual
Yeah.
Eyes. That's when you see sometimes what it would be like to have
Yeah.
Those eyes.
Yeah.
Except it's only artificial because it's just painted on.
Yeah. So Krishna, so he's saying, Kura is going on the road to Vrindavan. Surely I shall see the face of Lord Mukunda, since the deer are now walking past me on my right. So he's seeing an auspicious sign. He's interpreting that. So we think, according to our mentality, we see something as favorable, auspicious, or inauspicious, or unfavorable. So look what, as soon as he saw something auspicious, he took it to mean, oh, this means I'm going to see Krishna. Mm. That was his definition of auspicious. Mm. And inauspicious would have meant, I'm not going to see Krishna. And so this is the dividing line. And this, on a simple level, is what surrender is. Too, that if something is auspicious, do it. Accept it. If something is inauspicious, reject it. Whatever it is. And what is an inauspicious means? That will bring me further from Krishna. Further from seeing Krishna. Anakulasya sankalpa patikulasya varjanam. If something's favorable for me getting closer to Krishna, grab it and do it immediately. So surely I will see the face of Lord Mukunda, since the deer are now walking past me on my right. And that face, now he's going to describe the face that he will see. It's framed by his curly hair. What color is his curly hair? It is beautified by his attractive cheeks and nose, and his smiling glances, and his reddish lotus eyes. So that's the main features of a face. So he has red lotus eyes, long almost to his ears, and they are reddish. Why are they reddish? Balaram sometimes has reddish eyes, but it's said that Balaram has it because he has a tendency to get angry. And when one's eyes are reddish, it's considered a symptom of anger. But why does Krishna have reddish lotus eyes? Pinkish, usually, it says. Seeing Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he just comments, seeing the auspicious omen of a deer, Akura ascertains the fulfillment of his desires, ascertains the sure fulfillment of a desire in this verse. Akura thought, it is sure that I will see Krishna's smiling face surrounded by his curly locks, his lotus eyes, his sweet glances, his beautiful cheeks and nose. So you can see how his meditation, as he's going, everything that he sees is being assimilated into his consciousness as in relationship to Krishna. There's nothing that he's seeing is distracting his consciousness. He sees a deer and he doesn't think, oh, what a cute deer this is, and oh, maybe I should feed him. No, he sees the deer in relationship with Krishna, and that reminds him of what is auspicious, and that is to see Krishna's lotus face, and then he thinks about Krishna's lotus face and the characteristics of Krishna. He's never seen Krishna before. He's heard about him, but he's never seen him before. So he just thinks, his meditation is getting deeper. So this is the process of moving towards Krishna, of going on a pilgrimage, of going to Vrindavan, of really of living our life. We want our meditation to become deeper on Krishna. And that's a perfection, that if what we see, yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pashyati, that if what we see reminds us of Krishna. Okay, any questions or comments?
Do you think that Lalita has doe-shaped eyes? So a little bit like your daughter Lalita and Jai. A little bit like Lotus Eyes, she's got. A little bit. Lalita.
Well, yes, it runs in the family, of course. Obviously, it's yes. That's what we need wives for, to keep us, make sure we don't get. Well, because I say, isn't that right, dear? So if you're a deer, you have doe eyes. So it comes from your side of the family, obviously.
I also teach them and I bring them out on special occasions.
But the gopis Krishna calls them the doe-eyed gopis, because what's the specific characteristic of the eyes of a doe? Yes. Huh? Blackish. But very, very simple. Simple and you could say sensitive, but they're very innocent. That's the word I was looking for. They're very, very innocent. What's the opposite of innocent? Uninnocent. Calculate. Guilty. Okay. Huh?
Calculate.
In no sense.
Huh?
In no sense. They're not sensual.
Oh, well, that's really good, isn't it? Pretty good. Never heard of that one before. We should have a dictionary according to Chaitanya. It's a good one. We'll put that entry in. I like that one. But they're very, very innocent. They stare with open eyes at Krishna. They're just captivated by him, and there's no duplicity. And of course, the Braja Gopis have no duplicity. But in a simple way, their hearts are always open to Krishna, and sometimes they just stare at him just because they're attracted to him and they can't stop it.
Guileless.
What does that mean?
Guileless means that they don't have any other motive in their hearts.
Yeah, simple. Simplicity, sarala. Sarala. Is that in Hindi also? Sarala. Simplicity of heart, that's one of the qualifications of a devotee.
Generally, if you have innocent children, they're well protected, well taken care of, and that means there's an absence of fear.
Yes.
I haven't had to sort of deal with things that have shocked them.
Yeah.
So it would seem also that they were very fearless in that way.
Because of their attraction, that made them fearless.
Yes.
So whether there was reason to be fearful or not, they were so attracted that they presented their doe-like eyes to Krishna. And when Krishna would see the doe, the not the doe-like eyes of the does, but the eyes of the does. Danyam sma mudagatayo pi harinya ita nandanandanan upatravachitravesam. So then he would remember the doe-eyed gopis. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
It's interesting that Guru is acknowledging that as like a major opening, path opened up for most unlikely source.
Yeah.
And instructions and so on that come.
What's interesting about that?
You don't know from what source an opportunity can open up in Krishna consciousness. Turn of life, it may open up into something auspicious.
So something inauspicious can turn to auspicious very. And you don't find out. But he recognized it immediately because it was, he had the desire, and this was actually, he immediately recognized this is, was going to be the cause of the fulfillment of his desire. So he saw it. So therefore he took it. He took such a horrendous order. Even though on one level, so peculiar that he accepted it because he was a devotee of Krishna, and Kamsa was out and out telling him his plan was to kill Krishna, and he asked a devotee of Krishna to be an instrument towards Krishna's death, and he took it because he saw that this is an opportunity to fulfill my desire, and also he knew that it would be the actual cause of Kamsa's death, not Krishna's.
The instruction is you're more likely to see what Krishna is doing, what direction he's pointing, if the more that your focus is correct.
Yeah, nice point. You'll be able to recognize it if you know what you want. Any other comments?
What's a Guru's background? What's a Guru's background? He knows the question. What he would have become to him.
He's a family member.
Is he Yadu, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. And also everyone in Mathura got to hear about Krishna, and they knew. Because when he comes to Mathura, everyone knows that Krishna is the son of Vasudeva and he's returning. So they know that he's a Yadu prince.
How did they find out? Did they just find out or they've always known?
Well, it seems like it became known that he was actually the missing child that they didn't think was missing, but that comes, I remember reading that when we, everyone, when he came to Mathura, when Krishna entered Mathura for the first time, everyone saw him as a Yadu prince returning. So everyone seemed to know this, and they were hearing about the exploits of him killing this demon, and then it gradually became clear that yes, this Krishna who's doing all these miraculous deeds, super powerful deeds, is actually a Yadu prince, and Kamsa was thinking that could be him, but then when Narada said it confirmed it, and that explained why all the demons had been killed by Krishna, because he was actually the son of Vasudeva. But there's a in one of the books, I think it's either in the ninth canto, I don't think it's in this one, there's the genealogical sorts and explains who accrues exact relationship with Krishna. Yeah. Something Ahuka, I think, is accrues father and maybe also some connection with Ugrasena also.
So first of all, they were sent by Kamsa, like Batsasura and Bakasura. They were known with Guru.
They were his friends.
They hang out with him.
It seemed like you don't exactly hang out with the king, but, but you know, they were his like friend servants. But, yeah.
So they knew that he sent them to Vrindavan.
The people
and the Krishna killed them.
It would seem that he was known because sometimes in Gopal Champu he said. Comes and says, "Bring me," "bring Vatsasura here or something. Bring Geshi here. Bring Palamba." You know, they're all his associates.
Since they were the king, they were sort of servitude, you know. Less called than friends, but people who are under
his court. Some of them were actually ministers too. I think Chanur and Mastika had positions. They weren't just like wrestlers, but they were also wrestlers. The kings used to... Naraka Apsaras. But the kings used to keep some of the ministers who were good wrestlers because they needed
a bodyguard as well, like double the bodyguard as well as the ministers.
But they also needed somebody to work out with, you know, to practice with, and be strong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so kings often did that.
And keep the courage and the bravery.
Because sometimes in our dramas, that Chura Mystique is like that sort of thick-headed, big-bodied people. That's not actually the case then.
There's a lot of things we do in drama.
Especially in Australia, right? They tend to be a little bit corny.
It was like out of world championship wrestling.
Yeah, right. I remember one time seeing that one of the first dramas I saw was in Melbourne. I think it was probably 1975. It turned out to be exceptional in the Melbourne Temple. It was right in the temple, and it was on Janmashtami. It was like 11:45 or something, and the drama's going on, and suddenly Lord Brahma comes out, and you know it's four brahmacharis tied together, right? And then you know they're tripping over each other and going out, and they see something, they're offering prayers or something like that, and then suddenly one of them says, "Well, it's time for us to go Vinda, Mari Purusham. It's time for us to go Vinda, go Vinda." And then they sort of trip out and walk their way out and things like that. But then, this was the must have been the prayers of the demigods, something. Yeah. And then suddenly, and I remember Madhavisa, at that time, and the time approached for the birth of the most wonderful child, and that it was exactly at 12 o'clock, and then unexpectedly the deity doors opened, and it was wonderful. Because so we saw that above, just at that time in an unexpected way. And he was the most wonderful. He looked so wonderful. Mm-hmm. Do they still do dramas in Melbourne? Are they serious dramas or? Israel, do they do dramas?
Yeah.
Serious dramas?
Sometimes. And that's funny.
Cornwall is supposed to be...
Huh?
Cornwall is supposed to be walking through Melbourne streets in a napkin.
What does this have to do with anything? I think it's
probably
just recently?
No.
Oh.
I think it's a little Baptist drama, so I don't know, another category. The impression with the mind would have come up from there.
Unfortunately. In Chopati, we recently seen some very nice dramas. What dramas do they do in Melbourne nowadays? And Janmashtami, they'll do a drama or no?
They do. There are two or three dramas, kids' drama and boys' drama.
Hare Krishna.
You are still up